Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Welcome to On the Continent, your definitive guide to the biggest stories in European football. I'm Dotun Adebayo.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm Miguel Delaney.
On this edition, it doesn't bear thinking about if you're Barcelona, but we are thinking the unthinkable for them, not making it out of the group stage of the Champions League. Also, Ajax, hit for six by Napoli. It just ain't cricket. And just when you thought it was up, up, up, up and away with a cracking week in the Champions League, is it a bird? Is it a plane? No, it's more Super League talk. Let's start, though, with the stories that might have gone under the radar that have caught your eyes, gentlemen. Do you want to go first with that, Miguel? Any stories that we've missed?
So there wasn't much under the radar, but more so just how disappointing Milan were last night. It was a game I was at, Chelsea. I expected a kind of a big, pretty much heavyweight clash with a pressure on Chelsea. Chance for Milan to really stake their claim in terms of kind of going forward this season and emphasise their resurgence. And it just, I mean, it wasn't just the Milan that people imagine when you hear the name. It wasn't really the Milan that we've kind of seen for the past two seasons. I mean, maybe that was stepping up to the level, but it was ever really disappointing. Which is
okay, not under the radar, but under the bridge. How about you, Andy?
Well, something that was, I guess, more expected was what happened to Sevilla last night against Dortmund and the subsequent departure of Julen Lopetegui, who we knew was going ahead of kickoff. And it was played in this weird sort of semi-funereal atmosphere with Sevilla knowing that they haven't got a great team at the moment, that they're going to struggle to get out of the group stage of the Champions League, and knowing that Lopetegui was going. Now, that they were belted by Dortmund on the night, although from Dortmund's perspective, I think Alexander Meyer, their goalkeeper, had a slightly better game than you would expect your goalkeeper to have when you win 4-1 away from home in the Champions League against opposition that you're better than. And we saw this very emotional departure for Lopetegui at the end as he greeted the fans. The fans gave him appreciation, knowing what he's done for the club, winning a Europa League and getting them back in the Champions League. And it was interesting to see Monchi, the sporting director, out with him to seemingly take part of the responsibility for what's happening. Now, it looks like Lopetegui might not be out of work for long. Wolves have been interested in him before when they were taken over, and they're interested in him now with the vacancy they have. I think he's largely done very, very good work at Sevilla, but I would argue that he's probably run out of ideas, not helped by the recruitment that Monchi's made with aging players over the last 6 to 8 months. And ideally, I think he could probably do with a little bit of a break to have a rethink of how he's doing things. But it doesn't look like that's what's going to happen.
Well, it's not just going to be about adios on this programme. There might be some holas as well. And do remember, you can get in touch with us anytime during the course of the week at Football Ramble, at Dotton Adebayo, at Andy Brassel, and at Miguel Delaney. And this one straight away from John on Instagram. Don't know if it is adios or hola, but I take it, he says, that dropping down to the Europa League wasn't part of the plan for Barca this summer. I'm imagining, Miguel, you can say that again. I don't know how to say that in Spanish.
Well, there's... This is the great risk, basically, from Barcelona summer strategy. I mean, we've discussed it in detail, but this is a kind of a tangible development that actually creates a real issue. And kind of, it does kind of move the story on to the next step, because, I mean, this is how kind of, you know, this is where it starts to play out. I mean, ultimately, Barcelona's plan and why it was such a risk, really, is, even if it did make a certain financial logic, is that it's based on being a commercially attractive team that always competes for the Spanish title and always goes a distance in the most high-profile competitions, obviously being the Champions League. So they do kind of need to be getting to the latter stage of Champions League regularly, more than anything, to be a team that has buzz about them. Now, there's not much buzz about a 1-0 defeat to Inter Milan in the manner we saw it. And obviously, first of all, there is the basic fact that they're third in the group now. They've got a lot to do to turn this round. And immediately, a massive revenue stream, which is going the distance of Champions League. Like, well, that could end up being the difference between... It could end up costing them 60 million, potentially. Mm. Which, given the figures of the summer, the 600 million Goldman Sachs debt, that's not inconsiderable. But almost more concerning than that, because it's about whether they can actually get through this. I mean, I didn't watch the full game live. I was watching the goal show the night Andy wasn't on.
I was like, disgusted.
I was at Chelsea last night. Every time it cut to Barcelona, every time it was a big chance, it was actually doing the same thing over and over on, which is getting out to one of the wingers, usually Dembele, and him just swinging it in. And, I mean, that's not exactly...
So you're saying, basically, that getting rid of Luke de Jong was an error?
But it doesn't... I mean...
Not putting words into your mouth there.
He is the sort of player that could have thrived. Oh, you would have thought... I saw Lewandowski get a bit of heat, actually, on some of the more excitable Spanish media programmes. That should have been the sort of game for him.
Well, it was an interesting point, actually, because when I was... watching the Bayern-Barcelona game from the last round of fixtures with someone who works in Germany, they started tutting straight away and going, Lewandowski, you will go missing in big Champions League games,
won't
he?
Well,
which is quite interesting. So that's definitely a perception.
Is that a bit harsh?
In Germany, I think it's a little harsh, but it's definitely a discussion.
Yeah.
And it's not a completely closed discussion by any stretch of the imagination. And, you know, he should really... relish that bit. You know, that's a huge part of his game, that he loves, you know, fighting for the ball.
He
loves the combat element of being a centre forward. Now, some might argue he loves the combat element of being a centre forward against softer defenders, he's facing in La Liga most weeks at the moment. I think this is really interesting, because before this game, I thought this was a much bigger game for Inter. Under pressure, having lost at the weekend, having lost four games in the league already, and being completely outclassed by Bayern in that match day one. But now they've got to the other side of that. It feels like it's a bigger game for Barcelona to have lost, you know? Because, I still think that they're reasonably set to get out of the group. But having lost Dotton, two out of the first three, and as Miguel was saying... like not really creating that much. Mm-hmm. I mean, I realise they should have had a penalty for that Denzel Dumfries handball at the end. I really don't understand why they didn't.
Xavi kept insisting that, and he had a touch of the Graham Taylors about him. You know, do I not like this to the referee? I think he got a yellow card as a result, didn't he?
He did, but I thought more telling was the reaction of Simone Inzaghi, who had this like meek look on his face as if, oh, yeah, we got away with one here. And they certainly have. But the fact that this is the main point of focus, rather than the fact it's kind of given him a bit of a pass for the fact he didn't create anything.
And for all he goes on about being a Pep Guardiola ideologue, how much of that was from the Mourinho playbook then? You know, create controversy to detract.
It's an interesting point.
But it's like Miguel says, they seem to have one trick, which was get the ball to Dembele, let him cross, and hopefully Lewandowski or somebody will put their head at the end of it. And once that trick fell apart, it didn't seem like they were in the game.
I mean, it's remarkable when you have the midfield that they do. And I have to say, I did enjoy the little social media back and forth with Bastoni and Gavi afterwards, where Bastoni obviously published this picture of him seemingly dragging Gavi along by the neck of his shirt, going a good battling win last night. Of course, Bastoni is a bit of a rascal on social media. You may remember when Ashley Young left Inter, and he used to put out those really, really sweet tweets in Italian and Instagram in Italian and English. And he said, thanks for everyone for the last couple of years. And the first comment back was from Bastoni, a player more than 10 years his junior, saying in English, great bloke, terrible footballer.
Zero.
I mean, it'll do what he likes. But I think what Miguel was saying, when the Inter were able to dig in like that, when, you know, no Lukaku, no Brozovic, who's their most important midfield player, arguably, the one who kind of steers the team and everything, it felt like Inter were really on the back foot there. I'm interested to see if they can replicate that sort of performance at Camp Nou next week, because it comes around so quickly. But I think the idea at the start of the season that I had was, if Barcelona aren't going to get close to winning the Champions League, it's probably because they're defensively a bit short. And obviously they've got a couple of defensive injuries at the moment. I wasn't really envisaging them not being able to create like this.
Yeah.
But Andy is confident, nevertheless, that they'll turn things around and get through this stage and get to the knockout stage. Are you confident?
Yeah, I mean, purely because I think they've got ultimately that bit too much quality. And as Andy kind of referenced there, what Inter did was a surprise. Now, who knows? Maybe the group could be turned on its head if Inter's troubles in Serie A go on. They change manager. Say they get Tuchel. Although it seems likelier if he does go to Serie A, it'll be to Juve. But anyway, I suppose the issue more is, and again, we come back to, I suppose, the financial calculation that Barcelona have made. They've left themselves subject to these sort of variables when really they probably should have been, given the extent of their expenditure, given their ambition, they would have wanted to be cruising through this group.
But how much are those variables, though? You know, take it in pounds, shillings, pence, pesetas.
Well, it's tens of millions of euros. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it depends how deep they would go into the competition.
If they don't get through to the next round.
But yeah, I think as well, you have to look at this season, the fact that Sevilla are all over the shop, that Atletico Madrid might not qualify for the next round as well. So that is cutting them off, not just from prize money, but from a bigger share of the market pool, because that's divided between the amount of teams that are left in the competition. So it could be a massive difference to Barcelona not getting to the last 16 if they were to do that.
They've sold over 700 million euros of assets. That doesn't seem like enough at this point. Do they need to sell some more?
Well, I mean, I suppose it's more just to kind of the way the club is now financially constructed, the way it's built on so much at the moment, meet a long-term debt, with ultimately that, because the big plan there was always to kind of create the virtuous cycle that the debt was worth it if they brought in players of sufficient quality and commercial value, that it created a kind of a snowball effect, that they win more games, they get more commercially attractive, they build up revenues to the point that debt can be easily kind of eroded. But that doesn't happen if you're a team losing somewhat meekly to an underperforming Inter.
Just a final point on this, and forgive me, I'm not, you know, taking the mickey out of the dearly departed, but nevertheless, you've got to do this in a Graham Taylor voice, because Xavi said after the game, they've got three more finals to come.
And as Miguel says, that is the situation that they're in.
Come on. Bigger. We've done that. Can we not knock it?
Let's look from an Italian perspective now, not least on, Champions League success. Napoli, did anybody expect them to thrash Ajax 6-1?
Well, maybe not when the draw was made. Some of us were at that point talking about how this could be an open group, that Napoli could even finish bottom.
We might have spoken about that.
Yeah.
I think the thing is about this group, what's made it so interesting, well, we weren't expecting the Liverpool drop-off for one. But I think we said at the start of the group that Ajax and Napoli were two such unknowns. We didn't know how it was going to gel, how it was going to click. We know they've both got talent on the books, but the amount of turnover and the loss of experienced players on both sides, it feels for the moment like it's Ajax that are missing the experience more than Napoli. I think you look at the way that this game unfolded. Okay, Napoli are in red hot form at the moment, and that's what we're going to concentrate on here. But I think if we're looking at the way this game went, it felt to me that especially by the end of the first half, even before we even got to half time, Ajax were panicking. You look at the goal they let into Zielinski.
Yeah.
They're all up the pitch.
Yeah,
there's
this massive
space. It could have driven a tractor through that before scoring the third goal.
That fourth goal was remarkable. The one they just lost in the edge of the box. But I mean, first of all, the one thing I said, because I keep watching this, and as sensational as Napoli are, there's almost an element of unreality about it. We've seen these things before, in a sense that you wonder kind of how actually sustainable is this. I mean, teams can collapse in that way. It's happened in Serie A before. It's happened in Napoli before. But even if that were to happen, and obviously there's a giddiness about potentially going for the first title since Maradona was there. Even if that were to happen, they've obviously made immense progress this season. And I do wonder, I mean, given so much of the focus at the start of the season was how they've lost pretty much the spine of the team. And that's obviously going to require a reassessment. But I do wonder, given the specific way Spalletti works, whether you're having this sudden new young core actually worked in his favour in that way, kind of hungry. That it's one of those situations. I mean, I think Lorenz is in the Daily Telegraph today actually talking about how this was always his plan. It was part of some. I wonder about that.
Yeah, I wonder about that.
Well, given the way that you've both tried to dig yourself out of the hole that you made for yourself once upon a time, and the great thing about Football Ramble is that our listeners never forget. They hang on your every single word. So whether you've eaten enough humble pie or not with regards to Napoli, it remains to be seen. But Hof Petanke on Instagram asked, are you guys expecting Napoli to falter at some point, or are they genuine contenders for the Champions League?
I'm not sure we can say they're genuine contenders for the Champions League. I mean, I just think drink it in and enjoy it while it's happening. We've no idea whether this is sustainable with this set of players, and we've no idea whether the players who are on the bench are ready to step up. And, you know, at the moment, it's lovely to see like the sixth goal that Napoli scored with the Ndombele assist and the really emphatic finish from Gio Simeone. If those two are to start five games in a row, we don't know what effect that would have. We don't know if they're ready to do that. I would hope so, and I would love to see them do their stuff, but we really don't know. As well, you've got to bear in mind, like Ajax won all six games in the group last season, and they didn't get past the last 16. You know, so the style, it's not just that they won with great style. They absolutely hammered Dortmund twice, 7-1 over the two games, 3-1.
They had a different coach then, as everybody knows.
Yeah, yeah.
The one thing I would say, I mean, usually, as you say, there's such a break between the group stage and the knockout stage, and they're also so different in tone that it can really cause a... Like, it's almost like the form of the early season is relevant. But I wonder, even could we see that go back the other way with the World Cup this year? Because obviously, this group stage is so crunched together. Then we've got the massive. I mean, because I do think it's actually underappreciated the effect the World Cup is going to have on the latter stages, especially in terms of how many senior players come back. having felt the intensity of it. And it can take a while to recover. You know, the most famous example being Roberto Baggio after 94.
Yeah.
I mean, just looking through the Napoli team, obviously, the real star, Kvaradona, he's not going to be there.
Is that helpful or unhelpful? I don't think we can tell, because at the moment, if I was Kvaratskhelia, I would be wanting to play four times a week. Because,
yeah, yeah.
You know, he's in such incredible form. He's 22, you know, he's full of fitness and running, and he's playing brilliantly at the moment. The last thing I would want if I were him were a 1.5 month break.
I suppose it's more about freshness, though, I suppose, and maybe they can use it in the pre-season.
You see, this is interesting.
And Italy aren't there, of course, either, is it?
This is an interesting conversation, because obviously, if the caveat to who's going to win the Champions League is the World Cup, then you might look to wonder whether the team that's going to win it is the one whose goal-scoring machine isn't going to be at the World Cup, and he'll be fresh and won't be knackered and certainly won't be injured.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting point. I mean, it's almost like it's going to be two separate Champions League seasons.
An apertura and a cloud.
exactly. All coming round to the way we want it in European football. But like for the moment, the longevity of Napoli, it doesn't really matter to me. I'm just enjoying watching them playing so much at the moment. You know, only one team has scored more goals in the first three games of a group stage. And that's Arsenal, going back, I think, about 11 years. So...
Arsenal.
It's pretty amazing. Arsenal.
Yeah. Okay. This question from Nick on Twitter. It says, with Raspadori getting a double at Ajax on the back of his two goals for Italy, what's his ceiling, if you like? Can he become one of Europe's top forwards?
I think he's got quite a high ceiling. I think there's no doubt about that. It's funny, I can't look at him really without thinking of Roberto De Zerbi and him starting off at Brighton. Now, we mentioned this on the Ramble a couple of weeks ago. I was saying, when you look at the way he developed Locatelli and Raspadori while he was at Sassuolo, as I said on there, Brighton are never going to go and buy 50 million forwards, so they want De Zerbi to develop someone in that sort of way. Now, I never thought he'd do it so quickly that Leandro Trossard would score a hat-trick at Anfield in his first game. I think you look at Raspadori, he's made the move at the right time. I think as well, you look at the fact that there's that loss of senior figures, not just good players, but senior figures, as Miguel was talking about before, Insigne, Mertens, Koulibaly. There's a bit more room for him to express himself, I think. And, you know, the team is waiting for a leader. So if you're looking up front, it could be him. It could be Simeone. I don't think it will be Simeone. I think Simeone will contribute rather than be an A-plus sort of player for them over the coming years. But I think midfield's the most interesting area for them, really. Because Ndombele is obviously someone who needs rhythm, needs to feel a sense of well-being around him. But the competition for places in there is absolutely fierce. You look at Zielinski, you look at Lobotka, you know, there's an enormous amount of quality in there. We talked about Kvaratskhelia. I think the other big difference, and the thing that was always going to be key post-Koulibaly, is getting a centre-half in that can lead the team. And Kim Min-jae has done that really brilliantly so far. I think he's been one of their outstanding players.
You can't get in the team if they're unbeaten domestically, internationally.
True.
And they're entertaining the crowds. You know, that's part of this. You know, you can almost feel them getting their groove on when they're on the pitch, you know.
That was another thing about De Laurentiis' kind of interview this morning, where he's talking about kind of his history in film. And how this is all—it's all part of this. It's putting on a show. But I mean, that's what they have actually become in more so. I mean, I'm trying to think kind of like similarities to this. Real Betis a few under Setien, but never to this level. But now Napoli are basically kind of the must-watch team in Europe.
Yeah. They really are.
Is it De Laurentiis of Hollywood fame? No, really, same family.
Yeah.
Oh my word.
Yeah. I mean, this is why when they signed Gökhan İnler, who probably is still playing in Turkey, Adana Demirspor, the day that he signed for Napoli, De Laurentiis like led him out of the wings. It was like this guy wearing a Napoli shirt and with a lion's head, and he removed the lion's head, and it's like, "Hello, I'm Gökhan Ünlü. I've just signed." So I don't think any of these lads have had to go through that.
It's showbiz, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, it always is. And I think
no show, no biz. Do you remember that from The Harder They Come?
Of course. I think that's really important as well, because you got the feeling that they had reached the end of a cycle.
Yeah.
At the end of last year, and there was. De Laurentiis was like thinking out loud, as he often does, why am I paying all this money for us to just finish second all the time? So to run it back with younger players, look, if they don't win the league this season, it's not going to be a massive failure. If they make top four, and actually, as well as them being good, the fact that Juventus are in a kind of hole has facilitated that a little bit. So they should be able to make top four, have a good Champions League campaign. If they finish third, fourth, and get to like the last eight of the Champions League playing like this, that's a great season.
There's two interesting dynamics there at the top of the Italian table probably shows. First of all, I think it's, and this is where, you know, De Laurentiis' comments are interesting as well, in that there's an ongoing shift in Serie A where basically, what is it now? It's almost 40% of the teams have American owners. And because all those American owners are so influenced by the modern shifts in football, principally, I suppose, the influence of the German model of running clubs and a lot of analytics, a lot of young players, and a lot of pressing. And that started, and you can kind of see that at the top of the table. Whereas I suppose, now, that's obviously influencing the rest of Italian football, but it's interesting that it's Spalletti and De Laurentiis that are doing this without necessarily making those appointments. But the second side of it is, I suppose, that this shift is also, it's yet another kind of almost, how to put it, yet another kind of open season in Serie A. I mean, it's probably the second in the last few years since Juventus, the empire basically started to crumble, where if someone wants to seize it, there's a real opportunity there to do something historic.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Florentino Perez, the Real Madrid president, will just not let this Super League idea go, will he? He emphasised his continuing pursuit of it in a speech at Real Madrid's General Assembly last weekend. Miguel, what did you make of it?
Well, it had never gone away because obviously the three clubs, Juventus, Real Madrid and Barcelona, are taking this court case to the European Court of Justice. And the almost first staging post of that is December, where a counsel will be given on the hearings in July for some sort of next decision to be made in probably around March, April, about whether these clubs actually have a case that UEFA runs a monopoly that is counter to how business should be run in the EU.
So it's a European Court of Justice level already.
But then on the other side, and UEFA's big argument here is that a monopoly is actually necessary because sport has a cultural power and also they run a kind of a pan-European body. Now, the interesting thing there is there are legitimate arguments against, I mean, as grotesque as the kind of original Super League idea was, there are fair arguments over how UEFA has this kind of dual or almost triple role, where it's kind of the safeguard regulatory body of the game, but also it's actually sort of in competition with some of its own clubs to a degree, because the Champions League is such a massive money-making operation. Mm. So one of the key arguments to whether those should be split. And obviously, the big plan for these clubs is ultimately they want to have the freedom to go up and go off and devise their own competitions. So, I mean, there's all this swirling around in it. Now, there was a lot in Perez's speech that was kind of bombastic and some of it almost delusional. I mean, all this stuff about how football is losing it. And this is actually relevant to what we're saying, about so many American buyers in Italian football. He was talking about how American sports are outstripping football and how kind of, football's facing a losing battle. Yet this comes at exactly the same time where there's never been more, the numbers are actually staggering, and here, behind the scenes it's even more so. It's basically like every single American billionaire or anyone who wants to invest in anything in America has realized, well, football is the most powerful cultural force in the world. Mm. Let's invest in it. They're trying to buy, American investors are trying to buy clubs all across Europe. The multi-club project thing is becoming so big. So from that perspective, Perez's argument is just bogus. But he did say one interesting thing where he's talking about kind of the wider issue and essentially how any new project would not feature fixed members. And I think that could be very significant going forward, especially as regards the court case.
Yeah, that's a change, obviously, from the previous argument that they had.
You could argue, Dotton, it's to undercut UEFA's reforms of the Champions League in 2024, which is meant to be almost, it's almost a more equitable Super League, isn't it? The way it's been put out.
But with no great support, no one really likes it. A problem is no one really understands it.
No.
And I think the key to kind of a competition working is its simplicity.
Well, that's it. I mean, I think if you go back to UEFA creating the Nations League, which is one of the better things they've done in recent years, obviously it's been kind of blindsided by the pandemic and the pile-up of the schedule.
And the World Cup this year, arguably.
Yeah, well, that's part of the pile-up, I think. With that, it was such a difficulty to get people to get it. And I don't think it was ever a particularly complicated format, but I don't think it was particularly well presented in those terms. It wasn't presented in particularly clear terms. So really, winning the marketing battle for it, I think, is very, very important. But this point that Perez came up with about, sporting dynasties like Nadal and Federer, and no one says that's boring. Well, I think it's different in the sense that Nadal and Federer are not organisations funded loads more than their competitors.
But also, they go through
no sort of comparison.
But they go through the knockout stages. They take on the lonely tennis players, and sometimes they get knocked out.
Exactly.
In the first round.
Exactly. It's remarkable. Also, the fact that Perez keeps going back to what young people think about football. Being told that by a man in his 70s, it's like, what? It's extraordinary.
Young people think about football what older people think about football. We just want, we enjoy the experience of football, whatever age you're at. A three-year-old kid, you can see them in the stands. They're enjoying football just like you are. And they're suffering the horrors of football just like you are. I don't actually think that's complicated.
I think the interesting thing, I was just going to say, Doctor, it's really interesting that this has come up this week with Florentino Perez's comments, and going back to what we were talking about in the start, Barcelona are where they are at this point. And that's why, you know how I've always found it a bit curious in the last decade how Dortmund and Bayern, for example, are real rivals on the pitch. Again, it's a sort of like mutually beneficial rivalry, really, a commercially expedient rivalry. But they're total allies off the pitch. What they want, what they want to do globally, all their interests align, and it's exactly the same with Real Madrid and Barcelona.
It's a really interesting point. It's actually been, it hasn't really been kind of, people haven't gone into it that strongly yet, but it's really worth raising that regard. And it's amazing how joined at the hip Barcelona, Real, and Madrid are now.
Yeah,
it's actually remarkable, and how much their interests align. But yeah, you're completely. And I mean, I suppose if we want to get into a bigger framework of this, especially given Dutton's mentioned the Qatar World Cup there. I mean, also what this entire project is, and this is another issue where the kind of black and white nature of it becomes complicated. What this entire project is basically a response to football's institutional laxness towards sports washing project and state-owned clubs. That is its primary root, especially when you look at what, I mean, Paris Saint-Germain's grand, actually, both of them, Abu Dhabi's Manchester City and Qatar's Paris Saint-Germain have basically caused this at Barcelona. First of all, City take Barcelona's entire brains trust over the course of 8 years. Secondly, PSG basically take their entire playing talent. I remember being told around the Neymar transfer that one of the and I think we've mentioned the show before, but one of the motivations or one of the at least part of the thinking of it was not just to take these stars, but also the knowledge that most of Europe is going to bankrupt themselves trying to catch up with these clubs, and that's exactly what's happened. So at the same time, all this runs alongside the fact that there's kind of deeper political games here, but basically Qatar, not that they control European football, but they have significant influence given the most powerful figure and most powerful club in the ECA right now is PSG through Nasser.
What's been the reaction from the rest of European football to Perez's comments so far?
Muted, but interested. I think it's fair to say. No one's really willing to break cover at the moment, and everyone is happy to use Real Madrid, Barcelona and Juventus as this sort of Trojan horse. Now, we've said, for the reasons going back to the start with Barcelona and where they are at the moment, why they would welcome that sort of certainty. Juventus, whose whole sporting project is hamstrung by where they are at the moment. And bear in mind that, you know, that over the past decade plus, they've been the financially strongest of all the Italian clubs. But they're in a situation at the moment where ideally they would fire their coach, Massimiliano Allegri. They can't because it's too expensive and it would further set back their rebuild. But as Miguel says, there are other clubs out there who have overspent, who have got themselves into tricky financial models. And I'm thinking of a club like Atletico Madrid, for example, who are a club who have been incredibly beholden to Champions League money since they got successful, since they moved stadium and got a bigger stadium. If they thought this was going to work, they would leap at this in an instant. And I think there are other clubs like this as well. So they're all waiting for December. They're all waiting for this court case, and they're all waiting to see which way the wind is blowing, because this ruling about there being UEFA monopoly or otherwise on organising competitions. This is important, not just in terms of the Super League. The Super League is an element of it, but it's the fact that clubs will lead things going forward rather than an independent body that considers sport ahead of, say, the entertainment business.
That's what the argument is essentially about as well. It's whereas the structure of European football, in terms of power block and its institutional structure, basically has the national federations as the basic blocks, with that feeding into UEFA, what the clubs want to do is basically realign it. So the basic unit of power is the clubs themselves.
So it's like a Europe-wide Premier League, basically.
Yeah, essentially, yeah. And on that, I mean, I suppose, depending on who you talk to, there's all sorts of opinions on how the court case is going to play out. No one knows for certain. At the very least, think there had been a feeling it would be a slam dunk for UEFA. At the moment, no one seems to think that. I wonder whether it'd be some kind of fudge, whether there is some sort of kind of wall put up within UEFA between different disparate bodies. But ultimately, to sanction a new competition, you still need UEFA's agreement, which would be kind of a classic kind of solution that really kind of satisfies nobody. But at least kind of allow, because the other side of it is we potentially football getting into a kind of a dart situation or a cricket situation with disparate kind of bodies and competitions all over the place, which I don't think would be good at all.
Yeah, it's not been good for boxing, has it?
Yeah, yeah. No. And again, there's also the inherent question, and whatever the flaws of UEFA, do you want the game driven by just the kind of the biggest forces who ultimately, and this has of course been central to the Super League discussion as well, are acting in their own interests? And but the way, one of the predictions that if the Super League get their way, I think what a lot of people seem to feel will happen is that it will lead to either a competitor to the Champions League or a competitor to the domestic leagues, potentially, I suppose, where it's possibly the three big clubs still driving it, Juventus, Barcelona, Real Madrid, and a lot of those kind of clubs who are essentially too big for the domestic league but not big enough for the Champions League, and you've got a fair tranche of them that are massive European names and would make any such competition quite commercially attractive.
Quite apart from the existential questions as to where, you know, the organising bodies might be left, does UEFA have a defence that will stand up in court?
Well, it's ultimately based on kind of sport as culture. And one of them was also about kind of the closed nature of the Super League. UEFA's defence has basically been predicated on how awful the Super League project has been, whereas the Super League argument has been more about, it's about kind of technicalities of law. Mm. So it basically depends on the interpretation of the court. And the one thing, these courts tend to be, it tends to be quite political. UEFA have the backing of most of the EU member states. But we'll see how it plays out.
Whilst we wait for that decision by the European Court of Justice on December the 15th, I must ask you both to recommend a game of the week for us to peruse this week. I'm going to start with you, Andy, because something in Germany has caught your eye, and not necessarily for what might happen on the pitch. Well, that might be part of it.
Yeah, that will be part of it as well. It's a bottom of the table clash between Leverkusen and Schalke. Schalke, we always expected them to be down there. We're used to seeing them get played off the pitch by the likes of Augsburg nowadays. That's where they are financially and sportingly. But going to Leverkusen, who are second bottom, only 1 point Bochum behind them. And they've got a new coach after being well beaten in the second half at Porto in the Champions League this week. And Gerardo Seoane was on the way out anyway. That accelerated it. Xabi Alonso is the new coach of Bayer Leverkusen. I know, what a dreamboat. Everyone's very excited about it. They're going to sell a lot of training gear off the back of that, I think, that they were struggling to shift before. But he's got a lot to sort out. I don't think they're in danger of going down, but this has got transitional season written all over it already. Now, we've already seen Xabi Alonso as a coach who was mentioned with the Borussia Mönchengladbach job going back a year or so ago. Has got lots of ideas, has got lots of energy about him, knows German football already. You feel Leverkusen is a relatively pressure-free environment to try stuff out. But they've got a squad that's built to at least try and titillate Bayern and do well in Europe. Now, nothing's finished yet. I kind of feel that if they could get a move on, even the Champions League's top six is not out of the question, and maybe even Champions League is not out of the question, but they're going to have to be really, really good really quickly. And they could do with a result against one of the worst teams in the division to facilitate that.
It's Oktoberfest season. Obviously, I've already ordered my beer to wash it down with, but what would you recommend to eat?
No German food this week. I mean, Xavi's in town. So I think a bit of Basque tapas has to be, you know, it has to be the creme de la creme of cuisine for this one.
I think he's nicked your cuisine, Mikel. But what's the game that you'd recommend?
I mean, actually, it's one of those, given Andy's gone so low, it's one of those weekends that throws up where there's actually a fair few kind of big heavyweight clashes. Milan Juventus and, of course, the Clásico itself, Bayern against Dortmund. I suppose we've got to, I mean, just for the, because the fixture is always electric at the very least, even if it's become somewhat predictable in recent years, but there's always that energy to it. So I suppose I'll go with Bayern Dortmund and maybe have some currywurst.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Anna Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, and join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.